Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 24th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till 11. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our... The Bible, we're in the Gospel of Luke. We'll pick up where we left off last week. We are in chapter 19, I think. Yep. Chapter 19, the Gospel of Luke, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 19. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was the chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him, and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be guest with a man that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, This day is salvation come to this house, for so much as he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost. And as they heard these things, he added and spake a parable, because he was nigh to Jerusalem, and because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. He said therefore, A certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom, and to return. And he called his 10 servants, and delivered them 10 pounds, and said unto them, Occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him, and sent a message after him, saying, We will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called unto him, to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, Well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And he said likewise to him, Be thou also over 5 cities. And another came, saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. For I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up that thou laidst not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. And he saith unto him, Out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own with usury? And he said unto them that stood by, Take from him the pound, and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, Lord, he hath 10 pounds. For I say unto you, that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither, and slay them before me. And when he had thus spoken, he went before, ascending up to Jerusalem. And it came to pass, when he was come nigh to Bethphage and Bethany, at the mount called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying, Go ye into the village over against you, in the which at your entering ye shall find a colt tied, whereon yet never man sat. Loose him, and bring him hither. And if any man ask you, Why do ye loose him? Thus shall ye say unto him, Because the Lord hath need of him. And they that were sent went their way, and found even as he had said unto them. And as they were loosing the colt, the owners thereof said unto them, Why loose ye the colt? And they said, The Lord hath need of him. and they brought him to Jesus, and they cast their garments upon the colt, and they set Jesus thereon. And as he went, they spread their clothes in the way. And when he was come nigh, even now at the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, Blessed be the King that cometh in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. And some of the Pharisees from among the multitude said unto him, Master, rebuke thy disciples. And he answered and said unto them, I tell you that if these should hold their peace, the stones would immediately cry out. And when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it, saying, If thou hadst known, even thou, at least in this thy day, the things which belong unto thy peace. But now they are hid from thine eyes. For the days shall come upon thee, that thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, and compass thee round, and keep thee in on every side, and shall lay thee even with the ground, and thy children within thee. And they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. And he went into the temple, and began to cast out them that sold therein, and them that bought, saying unto them, It is written, My house is the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. And he taught daily in the temple. But the chief priests and the scribes and the chief of the people sought to destroy him, and could not find what they might do, for all the people were very attentive to hear him.
Okay, as I mentioned this evening in the introduction, we're now only doing 2 hours instead of three. Pretty much agreed by most of the leadership, I think all of the leadership maybe, that 3 hours is too long. We've been doing 3 hours for a very long time, I think, 2012 maybe, possibly even earlier, I don't even remember. This is even before we became the New York committeemen. But in any event, we're going to move to 2 hours. I don't know if Gerard is here yet, or has anybody seen Brent? I don't know that I told Brent anything about this. Did anyone tell Brent about that we're going to be moving to 2 hours?
Not that I know of.
I talked to Brent. I told him he needs to keep his remarks to 20 minutes max. 15 is better.
Right. Yeah, and he's pretty much been doing that, so he's been pretty good with that. Okay, do we have any questions or comments?
Yes, John.
In?
Fortunately, yep. We have a couple. Okay.
Okay. All right.
First one. Please share your thoughts on how the 17th Amendment has put what part it has played in America's present situation. Would the divisiveness still be here and the executive power check? People may see government more accountable.
I'm not sure. Well, repeat that question again.
Okay. Please share your thoughts on how the 17th Amendment has put America, or what part it has played in America's present situation.
Mm-hmm.
Would the divisiveness still be here and the executive power checked more, as people may see government more accountable?
Well, the 17th Amendment was a very important thing for the enemy to actually execute, because what it did was it removed the power of the state. The states are no longer sovereign. They haven't been sovereign for maybe 100 years. And ultimately what I mean by that is that they don't really have anything to say concerning what goes on in Washington. There was a balance of power that was written in our Constitution. And it is a balance between the three branches of government and the people. And, of course, the people are supposed to have a government by their consent. But there is a balance of power. The 17th Amendment took the state's power. The senators are elected by the people, when, in fact, there was no need for that. They already had representation. And, of course, that is Congress. And the whole process was that... Congress represented the people, but the Senate represented the states. And a lot of these problems that would have happened would have been fixed and prevented years ago. Okay, so it was very important for them to seize control of the 17th Amendment. just as much as it was to enslave the people and to remove our authority and our any kind of control that we might have, and enslave us with a slave tax, which again, between that and inflation, the control of the money, put us to the point that we spend so much time focusing in on just trying to survive and feed our family and pay the bills and just keep going. But again, 17th Amendment was strategic. And of course, they seized control of Congress quite some time ago. I mean, just think about all the power and the authority they've had going back as early as, 1871, I believe it is, the rule of the Organic Act. And they were able to get that passed through, and how easy it was for them by the early 20th century that they brought forth the Federal Reserve, the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, and they really kind of seized control of everything. It's been in and out, I think, as far as an oligarchy control over the presidency, you know, the administrative for the past 100 years or so, but by the time Kennedy came around, I think it was pretty much under the control now of the oligarchs. And we being a democracy, as they say, because we are a republic, but as long as people believe we're a democracy, then you know, that's kind of going to be kind of our reality. And so a democracy is just a form of government in transition to an oligarchy. And that's what we're at. That's where we're at. I am so surprised even to hear the United States Supreme Court justices call us a democracy. Unfortunately, even President Trump refers to us as a democracy. Everywhere you go and listen, we're referred to as a democracy. And our founding fathers were clear that democracies were horrible. We were not a democracy. You don't find the word anywhere in any of our founding papers. And in the Federalist Papers, number 10, it's made clear that democracy is not what we are, nor would we ever intend it to be. So 17th Amendment was a big blow upon our liberty, upon the control. And again, the states, remember, the purpose of the struggle of the powers is that if the people didn't like something, they could prevent the states from pushing something forward. If the states didn't agree, they could prevent the people from pushing something forward. So there was that balance of power there. And that was lost. Okay, next question.
Okay. What are the steps one can take when you discover that the government has committed fraud against you?
Well, it depends on where you're at and how that might be. You know, in court, the only fraud upon the court that could be taken would be by the judge and any of the officers of that court. They can commit fraud on the court. And if you're talking about within a court, the only thing you really can do is put everything onto the record and make sure you get a copy of that record. You know, until we flip to the other side, then meaning being that arrests are taking place and government is being restored to the republic, and until we get to that point, really, it's very difficult to win in court. I had a success in court today, as a matter of fact, which is rare. You know, again, you don't get many successes in courts, but from time to time I get one. And I believe that I should win every time I go to court because my positions are always rock solid and just, and they're holding just positions, constitutional positions. But anyway, you know, mine was just traffic to a court. You know, I've just had it. I'm not going to pay them no more. And I did go in, and it was dismissed. And that's what I was looking for. They knew, I think, where I was heading with this. You know, and I even told them, you're trying to extort me. You know, they come out and they try to make that deal with you. And, you know, they offered me this deal. What was it? It wasn't a big deal, but yeah, it was $100. They'll save me $300 because they're gonna pursue $400. But look, let's make a deal. You give us $100, we'll let you go. And I said, that's extortion. I told the judge too when the judge came out, and I said, you guys just extorted me. You know, it's just like you go to court, you know, and this happens all over the place, you know, you go into the court and they'll offer an individual, maybe in a criminal thing, hey, look, you're facing 20 years and we're going for 20 years, but if we can make a deal, we can give you 3 and get you out, you know, a lot earlier. And unfortunately, a lot of innocent people fall for that and they go for it. And it's understanding why they do that, because the whole thing has been set up and they know that they're probably going to be found guilty and they need to do something, or at least that fear. But that is extortion. That's just like the guy coming down the block saying, hey, you got really nice windows, and, you know, I can make sure that no one breaks those windows. You know, you give me so much a month and I'll protect your windows, you know, from some storefront or something. It's called extortion. But anyway, it's very hard to get, and that's in a court that's a court of equity, you know, it's a village court, or in my case, a town court. So it's not even, you know, the state Supreme Court or the federal Supreme Court. But again, it is difficult to get victory. But we do intend, you know, we have hundreds of cases that have attached their cases to ours. We've got a lot of paperwork filed into the courts, and it's all building upon each other. You know, every time we file a paper, it's just nailing another, you know, paper to their door. And the day will come, then, the toll time is going to happen, time for payment. And it is, we insist that all the people that have been damaged needs to be restored. So people who have lost their homes, you know, they're going to just have to get some restitution for these people. People who have been in prison and the habeas corpuses were ignored, well, you know, something has to be paid here. Not only to restore the individual, but look, this is a criminal act. In my opinion, if I have to spend time in jail and it's unlawful, in my opinion, I want to see the judge who put me there spend 5 or 10 days for every day I'm in jail. And I think that's a fair exchange. But I, of course, anybody would still want to be compensated for that time in jail and the stress and pressure and so on. So, all right, next question. Anybody wants to get into queue, by the way, *6 and 1. There's nobody in the queue at the moment, so *6 and 1. We're going to go quite quickly into a Q&A, I think. But anyway.
Yeah, that's all the questions, John. I see Brent is here, and it looks like Gerard as well. So
okay. All right. Gerard, we're moving over, and Brent, we're moving to 2 hours off of the 3-hour plan. We'll see how that goes. I'm pretty sure we'll probably stick to that. I think the consensus was pretty well unanimous that we've been really 3 hours as long. I've been leery about really posting our Monday night programs up on our, not YouTube, but Rumble, because they are so long. I'm going to go out and see if I can't learn how, or maybe get someone else to do this for us, to stream us live so that we'll be going through Rumble as we're here on a Monday night. And we do, of course, have our radio streaming, and it'd be nice to get on to Rumble and have Rumble streaming, so I'm going to see about doing that now that we're moving to 2 hours. I purposely, of course, cut out the music in the beginning from being recorded, because that's been a major problem. as soon as they hear this music, they kind of shut us off. They did that on YouTube for quite some time, so we really didn't get anywhere with them. But Rumble, I think, has the same things, you know, with the music thing, so... I don't understand why, because we're not making money with it, and we're only putting one song out, and it has a meaning and a purpose to what it is that we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. But in any event, that's where that's at. So, Gerard, I'll probably pass things over to you about 10 o'clock, and Brent will take you in somewhere between me and Gerard, and you'll have time to share whatever it is that you want to share with us tonight. Okay, I see a couple people now into the queue, so we'll take some. We're done with questions, right, Jan? And I presume we have no announcements?
Yeah, John.
Huh?
That was the last one, John.
Okay, and we don't have any announcements, right?
No.
Okay. All right, before I take questions from people, let's see. We have the courses are now open. The foundation study is now open. I know people have been kind of sneaking in there, getting a little bit of a peek of it, but we had to flush everything out in order to actually get the course open and up to date. And so today it was refreshed and opened and up to date. It's a foundation study. It's a very, very good study. It's a real good primer for anyone that's really coming to learn about government by consent, to understand who we are as a people, our heritage, what our inheritance is, and who our founding fathers were, and what kind of a nation we've been built, and so on, and to understand common law. So this foundation study was put together by Ron and Gary, and it's very well done. And there are no questions in this. It's just a study. You just go through from the beginning to the end, and it is recorded as going through that. Anybody that wants to become a jury administrator needs to take every course, and they, you know, every course is accredited for them. But particularly the last course, which would be, well, let me open up a page here because it doesn't show on this here. This is a start here page. We've spoke about this since we put it up a couple of weeks or a month or so back. But we have the foundation study. We have the introduction to the Constitution course. We have the civics course. We have the government by consent course. We have the militia course. And we have the jury administrator course. Now, the jury administrator course is the most difficult course here. But I will assure you that if you've gone through all the courses, earlier courses, and what we're doing really is getting you familiar with our founding documents, particularly, and common law, of course, and the court system and how the process works, and where the power is, which is in the political and the judicial, and how they have taken over the political and the judicial powers, and we the people need to take them back. But if you go through the foundation study, the introduction to the Constitution, the civics, the government by consent, and the militia course, you'll be pretty well primed and ready for the jury administrator's course, although there is a lot of new stuff in there. But there's a lot of stuff that really it's kind of, you've already been, taken into it already and spent some time with it. So you should be able to do pretty well. But there are a lot of questions in that last course. I tried to make it as difficult as I could. The other courses, not so much. And again, let me just repeat myself, every one of these courses must be taken for an individual who wants to become a jury administrator. If you don't take all these courses, you're not going to become an administrator. Now, it is true that people may be taking it when we have the opportunity to take control on a county level, and they may not have finished the course, and they can be on the job training as long as they continue in the course. We set it up so that they have to finish the course within 6 months, if you take on the job of jury administrator, which is really replacing the bar attorneys that have taken control over the courts quite some time ago. And they control the juries, they orientate the juries, and it's pretty horrific, okay? It's amazing how many people have read their books, okay, the jurist handbooks, whether it be the grand jury or the petit jury. I'm just looking at the New York State ones right now, which is quite long. And, of course, the federal ones, which we've done a paper on that. And it's just amazing how we can read through that and not realize how damaging it is to we the people, how it. What it tells us is that we're not in control, that we don't have the authority, that they are the authority. They rule over us, and we don't rule over them. If you read through these booklets, that's what you find. It even goes as far as saying that, for instance, if a jury finds a bill, of an indictment or not, it really has no validity until the bar attorney signs it, whomever that might be. Okay, it's usually the prosecutor, U.S. attorney, prosecutor. And that's pretty sad that we fall for that and allow this to be. And how the judge will tell us, well, I'm going to get to decide the law, not you. I'll decide the law, you decide the facts. And, of course, they're going to make sure that they're going to prove that they broke the law and the law is not lawful. And then they require a conviction, and they've been getting it more often than not. it's been happening, and this is the damage, or this is they've taken away our liberty. You know, we the people ordained and established the Constitution for them. We are the final lawmakers. We make the final decision. We get to decide whether we like a law or not if it's being applied, and in a court of law. And it's rare that any kind of a law would be applied outside the God's law, that would be applied in a court of law. In the case of a criminal case where an individual is working maybe in an agency and where criminal charges were brought up against them, well, there's equity. You know, there are codes that are written down that they had to have followed, and they've agreed to that beforehand. So it's called a nisi prius court. Unless you agree, you have to disagree. Actually, you have to really agree, but they really try to bring you in, and you have to disagree, and that's how they get around the civil law thing. But in any event, people have come into the courts, and they've been held to codes if they worked for the government, a government agency. They're going to be held to the codes that were written, that we gave Congress the authority to write. And anybody that is in commercial activity and had committed some kind of a criminal act and is applied, the equity is applied upon them in a court, in a court of law, where there is no, civil law. There is no statutes. But again, it does apply to them if they've been working one of those two places, commercially or within the government itself, somewhere in an agency. But the people have the power to nullify it. They can say, I don't like it, we don't agree, it doesn't apply in this case, whatever they want to say, it doesn't matter. They just nullify it because we're the sovereign, and the sovereign makes the law. And we, the people, have the final decision. And this is where people really have to really understand and think about this, because this is power, okay? We decide it all. We decide who goes into office and who doesn't. Of course, they robbed that from us too, but committees of safety are bringing all these things back to us, providing we get enough people moving and let's get doing. But we decide who gets into, or who we're going to put on the ticket or not. So right now the party bosses, like I said, are deciding that, but we will be doing that soon. Then, of course, it's up to the people whether they want to choose this person on the ticket or that person. We decide in a court of law what is lawful and what is not. We the people decide on whether we should give an indictment or not. We the people decide in a trial by jury whether the person is innocent or not, whether the person and what the penalty might be. We decide the law. We decide the facts. We decide it all. That's our system, and that's a powerful system, but it hasn't been working that way, not for quite some time. Well over 100 years. Lysander Spooner, who wrote Trial by Jury, even back in his day, there was all kinds of problems. You know, there were a lot of courts throughout the colonies that the bar had already gotten in, because the bar was established here in the colonies back in 1750, and the purpose of the bar was to destroy the common law in the colonies. And they did a good job at it, because there was quite a few courts that were existing when we were becoming a nation that still, and continued to this day, that are chancery courts. They apply civil law against them. And pretty much anywhere in America now, you go into any court, they apply civil law against you. The United States Supreme Court claims to have fused together equity and law and call it civil law. That's Babylonian law. Same thing as the law of the city or municipality law. And the whole purpose is to control the slave, you know, to control our behaviors and to fleece us of our monies and our things as much as they can, and even our children. They take away our children, they take away our homes, they take away our salaries, they take away our monies, our savings, they take anything they want. And the whole stage is set. And it's time for the people to wake up and take it back, because none of this should be. And it could, if the people were educated, and Jefferson said, we don't have government by the majority, we have government by the majority that participates. And so therefore, if If, you know, those who are participating, it doesn't take that many people. We can turn this whole thing around and bring this thing right where it belongs. We have a generation or two that is lost, and I don't even know if we're going to be able to salvage them. They've been so damaged in the past 30 years or so. And this has been going on for a long time. A lot of these things are going on even when I was a kid and before that, of course, because they've been working on that. But it had really gotten really bad in the last 20 or 30 years, particularly, and 30 years, I'd say. So anybody born since about 1990 and on, and maybe even earlier than that, they've been seriously damaged. Their minds have been defaulted into this fictional world. It's very difficult to get these people out of it. Now, of course, there's always exceptions. There's people, children that and young adults that have grown up and were able to be correctly taught, maybe by their parents or someone else, somehow they learned this or that. But generally speaking, most of the people were in trouble, you know. And so we need to really get involved, and we're through the committees of safety, start to visit the schools within our counties and make sure that they start teaching the law, teaching civics, teaching the Constitution, teaching government by consent, teaching people how to have how to win in court, how to go and defend yourself in court. Everyone should be able to defend themselves in court. Everyone should understand the process and the procedure. We shouldn't have to have lawyers represent us. Of course, you know, we can have lawyers to get some counseling from. But we really should be doing this on our own, because ultimately the courts of law are logic. It's all built upon maxims. That's truths that are undeniable, and the facts. So our law is undeniable truths and facts. That's what our law is. Equity, of course, is a different thing. That's code, statutes, and that's applied again to people who work for government agencies. It's work. You know, for instance, the president is governed by a certain codes, I'm not sure which code. For some reason, I keep thinking maybe code 4, USC 4, but I don't remember. No, actually, that's the flag, I think. Anyway, the president is governed by codes, over 1,000 pages, I understand. Congress is controlled by codes. Every agency and every form of government is controlled by codes, whether it be, you know, statutes or regulations, and it's all called codes anyway. And we gave Congress that power and authority to do that, because we expect them to do that. So the president can't act outside of those authorities that he has been given by Congress ultimately, but ultimately it came from the people with the authority to Congress to do it. So. All right, well, anyway, I guess we'll go on to questions. We've got some people in the queue. Gerard, are you here? Are you going to be around 10 o'clock? And I'll pass control over to you, and we'll move over to Brent, 10, 15 or so minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I just got one question. Black's Law Dictionary, I know we have it on the site. Is that under... Right.
Should be under education, under law, I believe. Okay.
Under law.
Right, law. And you come down to court forms and process. You click on that. I'm sharing it on the screen right now. And you will find Black's Law down in here, and you can download a copy. By the way, I also wanted to mention, I'm almost finished with the administrative course, the jury administrative course. I got one more chapter I'm still working on. It's the longest chapter. It's the most difficult chapter. And definitely by next Monday, it'll definitely be up. But people can check for it. You can go and see if the link is working. The link is found under Education Starts Here, and you click on Start Here, and then you'll see the list of courses. Right now, it's a dead link. It won't go anywhere. But soon, that'll become an active link, and you'll be able to get into the course. So if people are excited about getting into that course, I strongly suggest before getting into that course, you do all the other courses first. Because then you will be primed for that course. It's extremely important. It'll be much more difficult if you're not primed. But in any event, you can get into that course. Just keep checking the link, and it'll become active. That is a course also that you have to be a premier member in order to get into. We have two courses that require people being a premier member. One is government by consent, and the other one is the jury administrative course. And a premier member is someone who's given us $5 a month or more. That's $60 a year or more. That's a cup of coffee and a maybe a bagel or a donut or something you give up once a month. That's the cost of being a premier member. So pretty much anybody can afford that. And that course is going to be available shortly. The next thing I'm going to do, and I'm kind of hoping to do this pretty quickly because I got a lot of stuff already put together and I just got to bring it together and form it together in a book. But I'm going to put a book together on court access. I got one up here, but it's not really, I'm not happy with it. It's something I'd done early on. I'd done it pretty quickly and I'd done it early on when I was first learning things. So it lacks a lot in my opinion. I mean, it gives a lot of stuff for anybody who doesn't know anything. I mean, you're going to get a lesson as it is anyway. But I'm going to finish that, or you know, put that together as a book. I'm not sure whether I'm going to publish it and people can buy it, or maybe just make it available as a PDF where people will download it. And it will be something that I'll be charging for, but it'll be something, if you go to Jurisdictionary, okay, you'll pay over $300. I think he's at $350 or $375 right now for his course. And but he's a statutory. He's a bar attorney, and he does try to do a good job and does try to hold up the Constitution. But he fails because his bar mind takes control over everything he does. So you have to ignore, you know, all the statutory stuff that he teaches. But everything else is good, you know, the process, the procedures, how to write a paper, how to form it, what you got to cover in certain cases, and a lot of good stuff. And so I'm going to put it together from the common law perspective and how to beat down and defeat the process that is fiction, the fictional process, or at least put yourself in a position to be ready to be able to win there. You know, if you can put the judge in jeopardy, you can get a good ruling out of it. But, you know, you have to be careful how you do that, because at some point that judge does commit fraud on the court, and there is a conspiracy between that individual, if you're in a federal court, and the U.S. attorney. Or in the other case, whatever the prosecutor in the other case, whether on the state level. But anyway, that's hopefully going to be available soon. All right, back to you, Gerard. You were going to say something more? Gerard?
No?
Were you going to add something more?
No.
Okay, all right. Okay, so anyway, right now, there's a lot of stuff up here right now that's free. We got a lot of powerful stuff. Oh, I'm going to write I'm going to share a paper what I file every time I have to go to court on a traffic violation or something. I file a particular paper. Half the time, I never hear back from the courts. They just don't even bother answering me. They don't bother pursuing it. So I think that's a good thing. The other half of the time, they do push back and they put my plea in for me. And that's what this court did, too, and there was another crime that they committed, and I told them. They committed so many crimes. And so I wrote a paper. It's about 3 pages, okay, which really is my argument in the court. Plus, of course, I have the paper that I wrote that's filed. So this past time I decided I'm not doing this no more. If the court is going to still continue to pursue me, then I'm going to go back and pursue them back. And that was my first case since I made that decision. And I won through that. As a matter of fact, there was 2 charges on that case, 2 different cases. But in any event, I'm going to put that paper up where people can, you know, just put your own facts into it. And also the layout, the 2-3 sheets layout, where it would be your position to make your argument in the court and show the court whether they have violated the law and what is required breaking these laws. For instance, sending my papers back to me. I mean, they love to do that. And then put in a guilty, a not guilty plea for me. And if you look on the top of the papers, it says the people in the state of New York versus me, or whatever state you're in. It probably says the same thing. And I asked, what does that have to do with the people? People aren't involved in equity. This is an equity court. And I make my position, and you can follow along, you can make changes, but it is, I think it's a good layout and a good argument and puts you in a good position to potentially win the case. I know in this case that I dealt with today, one of the first things I made note of is the fact that, look at it, I am not one of those sovereign citizen people. You know, I'm just a constitutionalist. I started studying the Constitution and come to realize what's going on here. The courts are not being obedient. They're breaking the law all day long. And then I lay out my case. If you do this in open court, and I didn't do it in open court because I refused to go into the court with a mask on, and so they did it outside for me. And so there's no one there but me and, you know, the judge and the prosecutor and me. But if you could do it in open court, I think it would if you could speak loud enough, I think it would be really entertainment for the people. And I remember the constitutional guy. What's the name of that constitutional guy, Gerard? Do you remember? The constitutional man.
Yeah.
Do you remember his name?
The ex-military guy there?
What was his name?
Lying on the tip of my tongue.
You know, I picture this, if I could have done this in open court, I picture going through this whole process and the next person coming up, what he said, you know?
And we've had that happen when we were in court. He says, I want what he, we did that with Ryan.
Ryan, yeah.
The next kid up says, I want what he's doing.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So that's a way to, you know, not only entertain the people, but, enlighten the people. And I would bring a couple copies of the case with me if I had an open court.
Remember what happened because of that.
Oh, yeah. But then they got him later on.
They never took us into open court again. They made our own room, which is illegal. They set us up. Meetings that were not open to the public. Nobody else was there in a room, you know what I mean? Because they didn't want us in there educating the public. So,
right. Well, if you get them out of left field and you can get in there early enough, you can get some entertainment going for the people, you can get an education going for the people, and if you make a couple of copies of your case, you can also hand them out. You know, so it's just a thought. Send them to the National Liberty Alliance, and let's take back our government.
There you go. I want to ask somebody to help me. My computer's out of memory. It won't let me look up this word because it just wants me to close pictures. So somebody can pull off the page and send it to me on Black's Law Dictionary, the definition of mandate.
Mandate?
Mandate under Black's Law, the fourth edition.
All right, well, you will find, if you don't have Black's Law, whoever wants to do that, you'll find Black's Law on this page. This is one of the very few pages where you have to be a premier member to get to, by the way. And again, a premier member is someone given $5 a month or more.
But I hit the glass, the magnifying glass, and put in mandate, but it won't search it. It doesn't allow me to do it.
In Black's?
In Blacks, it's an Adobe,
it should be a PDF, control F, and when you control F, then that little box will put up, you put your word in there, and you click it and go through.
I don't have enough memory, apparently.
All right, well, if anybody wants to do that, they can maybe...
Just send me the page number, and then I can scroll to the page, I guess, I don't know, or a copy.
Word were you looking for?
Mandate.
And if you can give me the URL that brings me to that page... Because I have to shut this. It's just not my computer.
Well, it's a PDF download. Oh, goodness, I don't even know how many. Probably thousands of pages, Black's Law Dictionary. At least 1,000 pages, I'm sure. I don't know.
But can I just get to the page with the Adobe Acrobat Chrome extension? It won't work.
Well, you can put keywords in there, but you remember mandate's probably used a number of times throughout the Black's Law. To get to the actual meaning of mandate, you'd have to really kind of work your way down to the M's and then click a word.
Maybe it's too much. I could just look for a definition.
Well, you could, but there's going to be a lot of showing up words. up the whole thing. A word that I didn't put into my, footnotes. So I don't recall using the word mandate in footnotes. That's something that's up right now.
Well, I've read it on Black's Law, and basically what it says is the mandee to the mandator, and it's not binding until the mandee accepts it. Basically, That's what.
Well, yeah, and they accept it by deciding to take the job or to get involved in the commercial activity, and that's the acceptance.
Or if they say you have to wear a mask and you say you will, then you accepted the mandate.
Well, that's fraud. Look, that's a game. Well, look, once you discover the fiction and the lie, it doesn't matter when you discover it; it gets overturned because it's as if it has never been.
The point is a mandate is not a law.
Okay. Well, a mandate is a requirement to people who work for government, but and it's also a requirement for people who work in the commercial realm. So the governor can command anybody that's under that, you know, anybody commercial activity within his state, he can command and require certain things in a mandate. And I'm sure there's a, you know, only so far that they can go with certain things, but it doesn't apply to the people. Never does, never will. Because the governor doesn't tell us how to behave. He don't tell us what to do. In the case of the federal level, it's the president that might do a mandate. And again, it has to do with people who are working for government agencies and people who are involved in interstate commercial activities or even illegal commercial activities. They fall under that realm also and can be punished, and equity could be applied upon them in a court of law in the case of a criminal case. So all of that, you know, just kind of works together. But, you know, mandates has nothing to do with we the people. And you know what? When they play the game, because they're just playing with words, you know, Nisi Prius is ultimately the fact that at an earlier time you've already agreed to the process. Okay, and how did you agree to the process? You went to work for the government, or you got involved in certain commercial activities. That's when you agree to the equity that would be applied upon you, the statutes, the regulations, and so on. We the people can never be held to that. And if we ignorantly agree and make a plea, and that's the game they play in the courts, in the on the village level and the town level, where they'll come in. And they'll get you to make a plea, and then they feel so comfortable because he made a plea, he agreed to what we're doing. Otherwise, they're in trouble. They may not realize they're in trouble, but that's kind of the medicine for the individual judge that starts to realize they're in trouble, and it kind of makes them feel okay and good inside because now they got you to agree. But that's fraud. They did it fraudulently. There was no meeting of anything. There never was a meeting of the minds, an agreement, nothing. And you're not involved in any kind of special activity. And in the case of traffic law, you know, that's exactly what it is. It's TL here. It's called TL here in New York, which is of course, just the initials. It's traffic law. And that's equity. And that's commercial. It has nothing to do with me, you know. But in any event, anything else you want to add to that, Gerard?
Well, that's good. I'm going to make a point with it because, you know, people, what's it say in the Bible? My people perish due to their ignorance.
Lack of knowledge, yep.
Yeah, and so it's so never.
We have to realize first and foremost the lack of knowledge of God. Of course, that's the soul perishing. But also, we the people, we're blessed with liberty, living under his law, we perish for lack of knowledge. But go ahead, Gerard.
So that's really pertinent today, and that's what's going on, and we're living in those times. We're living that statement, basically, because we're ignorant. And if everybody would understand common law, the laws of nature and nature's God, we wouldn't be having these problems right now. So,
and, you know, look, they've been destroying morality for a long time, the morals of the people, the family, our relationship with God, the name of God, you know, keeping them quiet, taking Christ out of Christmas. I mean, they've been going on for so long. But it has gotten to the point where the people, they don't even consider God as part of this whole thing. But what I've noticed in the past years now, particularly, people are starting to move back to that. I guess it takes for the people to really be suppressed and beaten to come to the realization, I better go back home, you know. I better get back right with my maker. You know, he's the only one who can save us, you know. And that's a fact. For those who don't realize that, that's a fact. Only God can save us from these tyrants. And I do see that happening.
Okay.
Let me take a caller or two, and then we're going to move over to Brent, and then I'll pass the controls to you before we do that. But let me take Ross. He was the first one in the queue. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross.
the way that we have them, it would just be hard to take them out.
Oh.
Ross,
yeah,
you got the mic.
Tried the chicken.
So was this supposed to be your meals for the rest of the day?
Ross, can you hear me?
Yes. For the...
No.
Are
you there, Ross?
Yes.
Go ahead, you got the mic.
I'm wondering, I'm having problems with the constitutional course.
Okay. What kind of problems? Because I was... Go ahead.
I took the interjection 4 different times and it didn't move on to the next thing.
What? Where are you? What chapter are you on?
I'm not in the chapter. I'm in the very beginning of... I haven't even gotten to chapter 1 yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, that course was shut down. It was supposed to be turned on. I thought that it was turned on. Maybe it's not turned on. Is anybody else in the constitutional course, which would be the introduction to the Constitution? If there's anyone else that's in that course and moving through it, not having problems, maybe they'll let us know if that's the case. But I will be talking with one of our techs tomorrow concerning that. I was talking with Terry. She does some technical work on our site, and you know, she wasn't aware of anything particular. I know Jen, what kind of a problem? I think you mentioned to me a week ago someone has have a problem. Was it a problem like Ross has? They couldn't move forward. Do you know what it was?
Yeah, they couldn't. They could go in to where they left off, but they couldn't do anything. It didn't
further. Okay, and was that on the constitutional course?
No, I don't think so. I think it was on the civics course.
Okay. All right, so people are going in and they're not being able to move forward. And
right.
I presume some of them are already in for a while and now they're kind of just stuck. Someone
right.
like Ross is trying to just get started and can't get moving.
Yep,
so,
they go back
okay.
to it. It doesn't respond.
Okay, I'll try to address that tomorrow with the techs. I was going to call him today, but I wasn't sure of the specific problems that might have been on that side. Nothing really to talk about, but now that I understand, and we do know one of them. And you don't? Are you sure it's a civics course, or you're not sure?
It was a civics course, yes.
Okay, so the civics course is a problem, and then now we have one with the intro to the Constitution.
The data export is not working either.
Yeah, I know. I tried that today, too, so I'll bring that up to them also. Anything else?
No, that's the only ones I know about. I think probably all the courses have the same issues.
Right. Well, I do know the course that I just set up. I've moved all the way through it a couple of times.
Okay,
so that course is working. I think it has to do with, I think the courses have just been frozen down, maybe. I don't know.
It was, yours was done after the 15th of
December.
January when the crash occurred, so it's
wasn't that December or was that January?
No, it was December, right?
Yeah, it was
month.
A lot of those, yeah.
Yep.
Wow, time flies, huh?
Yeah.
Whew. It's scary after a while. All right, I'll look into that and get that going. Those courses are critical to what we do here at National Liberty Alliance, and we have to have these courses up and running for people to become educated so that they can understand who we are as a people and be able to have government by consent. You know, the reason why they've gotten away so far with so much in our courts and our political process is because we haven't got a clue. We have no clue of all the laws they have broken, of all the things that they have done, of all the powers that we should have that they took and they have. We haven't got a clue. Okay. And of course, your clue comes when you start to puzzle together, you know, who we are as a people and start working through these things that we here at National Liberty Alliance have been putting together for the people and for ourselves, of course. Okay, Ross, we'll work on that. And, you know, if it gets going for you, let me know. Send an email to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org and just say, hey, it's working now. That's all you got to say. Make sure your name's there so we see you. And then at least I'll know that things are going. But I will try to address it tomorrow. It may take a day or two to get it fixed. Okay?
Okay. Also, eventually can we sort of send it to its original charter?
Send it to the original what?
Revision of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution.
Okay, what about it? Article 1, Section 3. Did you want to ask a question about that, or what do you want to do?
Oh, you think...
Being composed of two senators? For what we were talking about,
The one that was chosen by the state legislators.
Right, yeah, that's the Senate, and we were talking about that a little while ago, which is the 17th Amendment did that, and it upset the entire balance of the Constitution. The entire balance of government structure was totally upset by that. And again, I do not believe that was very strategic for them to get control of the senators, because by taking control of the senators, they just pulled the states right out of the debate and the argument. Because the senators now are controlled by special interest groups just as much as Congress is, they were supposed to be sent by the legislators of the states, and I think that each state they've done it different. I think in New York, and it may be this way in all states, I'm not too sure, but I think what it is that the governor might put someone up, just like a president would put someone up to get onto the Supreme Court or some position. The governor would put up people for potential as someone who would be a senator for the state. And then the legislators would either agree or not agree, and then they'd send that person in. And I believe they had the opportunity. Well, actually, the Constitution says 6 years, so I guess it's a 6-year term, I perceive. Let me think about where that would be. I think it is a 6-year term.
And the Federalist Papers explains how it works. After your first term expires on the second year, and the third term ends on the fourth year, and the third term expires on the sixth year.
Yeah, but I would imagine that the legislators have control over that individual to a degree that if they go rogue and not bring forth the desire of the state, and starts going rogue and bringing her own ideas in. I would imagine, and I'm not sure on this, but I would imagine that the legislators can pull that senator back and replace them. But I do know it does say a 6-year term. You said there was the first and the third or something like that, which would bring you. It would be a second and a fourth or something, because they're on the even. They're elected or should be replaced on the even years, just like a congressman.
Yes, I feel like also that idea of the Senate, we have the states have a say in what Congress has done in the House of Representatives to make sure they don't overstep the bounds.
Right. Yeah, and that would be, let me see, I think that's Article 4, which makes it pretty clear. Let's see, I thought it was in Article 4. Maybe it's not. Hang on a minute. I'm not seeing it real quickly here. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, I know I saw it in Article 4, but I'm not picking up on it real quickly. But it is in Article 4 where it says that the voting, the suffrage can't be... Oh, here it is. It's Article 5. Okay. Where it says that... let me read this from a little part. Close the main section. No state without its consent. This is key. And this still sits in the Constitution, so it's in contradiction to the 17th Amendment. No state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. They have two votes in the Senate, okay, coming from the state, and they shall not be deprived of those votes, of that suffrage. And so that in itself it shows the balance of power between, because the state has to have a say in what goes on in the federal government, and right now, of course, they don't, because it's been taken over.
Yes. Means we have to repeal that 7th Amendment. So I think that would never happen, is because the people of England of the law, and also the progressives will say, oh, you take the people's right to vote for the your senators.
Mm-hmm. Right, and
that's
the
argument.
Yeah, the problem, of course, is, again, just as you just said it, it's the ignorance. You know, we the people cannot govern ourselves if we're ignorant to the Constitution, the authority, and the common law, and our history of who we are as a people. If we're ignorant of those things, you cannot have your liberty. You cannot have, a republic. You can't have it. And you can't have control of your government. We have government by consent, but how can you know if they're consenting? They're supposed to be consenting to the Constitution. When they step outside the authorities and the jurisdictions we gave to different, elected individuals, when they step outside of that and start doing whatever they please, and we don't know what we've approved for them or not, which is particularly in Article 1, Section 8, but other places too, 9 and 10, very important. And the earlier part of that is mostly the details of how Congress runs and meets and so on, and, you know, the makeup of Congress and the Senate and so on and so forth. But particularly Article 1, Section 8, 9, and 10, those are very powerful and very important to understand and know. To understand our unalienable rights, at least the very specific ones that were written down, and there's a lot more than that, but you got the first 10 amendments. If we're not really clear on the first 10 amendments and understanding them, because that is the ruler that we use, by which we use to decide to discover whether they are something is repugnant to the Constitution or not, other than, of course, you know, the powers that we specifically gave. But anything that violates an unalienable right is null and void. It's repugnant to the Constitution. It's repugnant to the laws that we have set up. But if people don't know that, we're in trouble, and that's why we're in trouble today. But go ahead, Ross.
It's because I think it's because the attorneys doesn't want us to know anything to correct it.
Well, the bar, I said that in court today, that the bar was the cause of this whole thing, and I told the judge, I said, you're breaking the law here, and you don't realize it because you've been taught by bars. I don't know that you're a bar attorney or not. She probably wasn't. She didn't really tell me one way or the other on that. And I said, look at this bar attorneys. They've been taught, to destroy the Constitution. And you've been taught the same thing because you've been taught from these people here. And you seem to think this is the law. And that's not the law. Here's the law right here. And I was reading it out to her. You know, I gave her a copy of everything I had. And, you know, they had thrown all my papers out. I don't know if they burnt them or what, but they didn't have anything in my papers. And I said right there, there's 2 years in jail, whoever took those papers out. You know, I think I ruffled their feathers a little bit on the one hand. Made them concerned, and they should have been, because I was taking that right up to the federal courts. I was taking it to the state court.
Yeah, I feel like I think when you elect the state senators and state representatives for both houses, they choose among themselves who they would want to send from the state lawmaking body to Congress. You have to run for office at the state level first before you actually run for the Senate.
Well, you know, the problem, of course, gets back to the party bosses who put the people in that they want, which the powers that be that govern the whole thing, you know, the powers that be, whoever they may be, it's about 100 or 200 families, but in any event, they really make the decisions on who's getting on that paper. Ballot.
Hey, listen, we got less than an hour left. And we got
I'm going to move over to you.
Okay,
Ross, thanks for the call. Sure we'll talk again soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to move over to the controls to you, Gerard. And Brent, are you ready to take the mic for a short?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So let me introduce Brent. This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Gerard, you've got the controls, and Brent, you've got the mic.
Thank you, John. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And My comments are my own, and may or may not agree with the principles of and the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to let me say a few words. And if I disagree, or if they disagree, rather, they will tell you. I trust them to do that. Let's get on with an important subject here. The grand jury. There are two kind of juries, fundamentally two kind of juries in our common law tradition. And remember, we are not a democracy. We're not even fundamentally a republic. Fundamentally, we're a common law country. We have a republican form of government, that's true. But that just, all that means is we have a legislature. We have a national legislature called the Congress, and we have state legislatures. And our Supreme Court has said what I just said. In other words, they've interpreted the Republican Form Clause of the Constitution, not to say that we're a republic, but to point out that there is a republican element in our government. Isn't it funny? The people that invented the words republic and democracy, the Greek city-states of the ancient world, such as Athens, they made no distinction between a republic and a democracy. Those two words were just synonyms for the same thing. And they're still that way. And if we wanted to live in a republic, we'd really, like the Republic of China and the Republic of Soviet Socialist Republic and the Republic of Revolutionary France and all the republics of South America, we'd be living under worse conditions that we're living than we're living now. And we're a common law government. I know you've heard me say that before, but it bears repeating. Boy, does it bear repeating. Now, when it comes to the grand jury, this is another glaring example of our Constitution of the United States and how to understand it. Our Constitution of the United States explains nothing. Nothing. It just throws out phrases and words, doesn't describe any of them. And these are important concepts it throws out, such as you're entitled to indictment by a grand jury in all cases of crimes in the federal courts. Grand jury. Does it say what a grand jury is? No. Well, how does the people that wrote the Constitution, the militia that ratified it, the people of the United States, how did they know what it was? Well, it was such a part of who they were that nobody needed to explain it to them. You know, trial by jury. Nobody needed to explain that. Matter of fact, the courts, ever since then, if they're interpreting the Constitution aright, this can't be said too much. All they're going to do is explain the terms and the words of our Constitution of the United States with our common law. That's the way they do it. And men, justices of the Supreme Court, such as Chief Justice Taft, has said that. They've said that the words and phrases of our Constitution are embedded, awash, in our common law. And you cannot understand our Constitution without understanding all of the common law tradition that these words and phrases freight into our understanding of what common law government is. Here's the grand jury. Who knows? Who could really describe to you much, if all, about the grand jury? Everything in our Constitution is a matter, understanding it, is a matter of understanding history. You don't know history? You don't know anything about our Constitution. Well, people say, how do we even start? That's right, how do you even start? People talking about the common law is going to be in this country or that country, and no, it isn't. Our common law has taken centuries to establish in our psyches. It's not something you can turn over to another country and say, here, do it the way we do it. That has never happened. There have been countries that have tried that all over the world, even since the founding of the United States, only to fall flatter and a flitter and not come to absolutely nothing. Do we really stop to consider what we really have as Americans? You know, we talk on Monday nights and we talk about our common law, we talk about our Constitution, we talk about trial by jury, we talk about due process, all sorts of things. And we all pretty much kind of just get it. You do that in front of a German, a Bolivian, a Chinaman? You think they'll have a clue, a Mexican down in Mexico? Do you think they'll have a clue what you're talking about? I'm telling you, they won't, because they have had in their tradition for hundreds of years just the opposite, and that's the way they see the world. You know, Mexico, after we got our Constitution, about 50 years later, trying to remember the year, I think it was 1826, about 30 years later, or 50 years later, they said, we're going to have a Constitution like America. America's a wonderful place. We're going to have a Constitution like them. And they drew up the Mexican Constitution of, it's either 1826 or 1836. I don't remember. And even though they drew it up, they had phrases in it that were parallel to our phrases and words in our Constitution. But the judges, the educated people down there, none of them had a clue what any of those words meant, any of those phrases, any of those concepts, like grand jury. If you don't understand the history or not understand it, just know it. It's just a matter of knowing facts or something about it. There's no way you can interpret what it means to impanel a grand jury or even a trial jury. For instance, you want to impanel a trial jury? When do you do it? Do you do it the week before the trial or 2 minutes before the trial? I know that seems maybe flippant, but no, it's very important. Juries are impaneled just minutes before the trial. That's our common law tradition. And if you don't do it that way, you're going to stand a chance of having bribery going on and shenanigans like you wouldn't believe. We've learned that through the centuries. It takes centuries to get through hard-headed people's heads and teach them anything, like us. Us English-speaking people, I should say. People that speak the English tongue, that's where the grand juries are. Well, we, for whatever reason, God in His providence has blessed us. I had a fellow tell me one time, and I've mentioned him before, his name was Fratcher. He'd been a prosecutor at Nuremberg. He was an Army JAG lawyer. And gone now, but I'm quoting him when I say this. He said, our common law is the second greatest blessing that Americans have. Our common law is the second greatest blessing that Americans have. Well, what's the first greatest blessing? And he said this, too. He said, the Bible is the first greatest blessing Americans have. The second greatest blessing is our common law. What do we know about it? What do we know about the Bible, for crying out loud? God help us. Here on these NLA calls, we talk about the Bible some, where it comes up, and that's the kind of thing that teaches us about the Bible, and then we get used to it. We talk about our common law. I'm going to talk about our grand jury. I'm limited to 20 minutes. I've already blown half of it, probably. Let me see what I can get to here. And I'm going to read something here from Wikipedia. And the reason I'm reading this from Wikipedia about the grand jury, because I was a little bit shocked at what I was reading, given the left-wing wacko attitude of Wikipedia. Listen to what it says here about the grand jury. Remember, the grand jury only exists in the English-speaking world. And although Mexico had a constitution that was kind of like ours, they never used it, ever. Still haven't. And don't have a clue what it means. God help us. Hope we don't use ours. We're getting that way in a lot of ways. Okay, let me read this from Wikipedia. The grand jury can be said to have celebrated its 800th birthday in 2015, because a precursor to the grand jury is defined in Article 61. Well, now that's fundamentally not true. The grand jury predates Magna Carta. That's what they're talking about here. Predates Magna Carta by hundreds of years. Magna Carta was just a restatement of common law principles that the Anglo-Saxons had practiced for hundreds of years, even when those tribes were on the coast of Europe. But they said that. Then it talks about Article 61, and that's the article from which recognizes, not establishes, recognizes the validity of the grand jury. The document, I'm continue reading from Wikipedia, the document was primarily composed by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Stephen Langton, He lived from the years about 1150 to 1228. He developed a system, Stephen Langton, for dividing the Bible into chapters. And this is the chapter divisions we have in our Bibles today. He was the foremost. Now, I'm adding this because it says he was a Bible scholar, but I'll add what he really was. He was the foremost Old Testament commentator of his day. That was back in the 1200s, 1100s, 1200s. And the concept of the grand jury, it is said, he took from Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 1, which says fundamentally, I'm reading from King Jimmy's version. It says, if there be a controversy between men and they come into judgment, that the judges may judge them, then they shall justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. Now let me read that in the Winterized version. A little more drawn out, but of course I think it's more accurate by far, although it doesn't read as beautiful as the King Jimmy's, as King Jimmy's translators. They wanted to make it pretty, and they did. The Winterized version says this: because a real case in controversy happens between mere men, and they are hailed into the course of fair play, and they shall follow fair play for them, and they, it's important we know who they is, shall aright, namely, the right-headed man. They shall justify the right-headed man. And they shall cause guilt of, namely, the wrong-headed man. They get to decide who's right-headed and who's wrong-headed. Now, that describes, fundamentally, the job of the jury. The jury are impaneled judges. The jury are impaneled judges. That's what they are. And at trials, there are 12 of them. The grand jury is something different. The grand jury, there are more. The grand jury does the same thing as the trial jury. The grand jury, like the trial jury, either says yes to the government or no. That's the whole of the job of the jury, to either say yes or no to the government. If it's the trial jury, the jury has the job to say, yes, Mr. Government, you may take this man's life, liberty, property, or a combination thereof, or no, you may not. And the decision of the trial jury must be unanimous. That is, all 12 members, all 12 men of the trial jury must agree one way or the other. And if they don't, and the judge finally decides in his discretion they're not going to come to an agreement, he dismisses them and declares a mistrial. It has to be all. Now, when you get to the grand jury, grand juries in Anglo-Saxon England before the year 1066 and even thereafter, for example, in the century, the 14th century, the 1300s, very operative there. During that time, the grand jury in England, Parliament did away with it, 1936. We're the only country of the common law countries, of which there are only about five major countries. We're the only one that has any meaningful grand jury at all. And the reason we have it is because it's part of our Constitution. We haven't got rid of it because we'd have to somehow get rid of the Constitution, and thank God we haven't. But even back in the 14th century, which wasn't long after Magna Carta, just the next century, Magna Carta was the 13th century, in the 14th century, the grand jury called on, it was a reconstitution of the old Anglo-Saxon grand jury, and they had a terrible revolt in England called the Peasants' Revolt. It was a bloody mess, bloody mess. And England takes great pride yet today, even though they hung a lot of people, they take great pride, and rightly so, that not one man was hung or even tried without indictment by a grand jury. That's been over 600 years ago. The grand jury was alive and well. The United States and the federal courts, federal prosecutions, have used the grand jury more now than they have in the past. Of course, the reason is there are so many federal crimes, so-called, almost 6,000. That's a travesty, because there's no way that the Congress or the Constitution gives the Congress authority to criminalize about 6,000 acts of men. No, the states are supposed to do the bulk of that, not the feds. Let me check my time here. I'll take just a little longer. Just a little longer. Well, the jury, or the grand jury, is called the fourth branch of government. I speak as a man about the grand jury, which is largely a mystery to most lawyers and most everybody else, too. Why? Because it's nothing. I mean, not a peep is mentioned in a law school education, or it wasn't when I went through law school anyway. Maybe it is today, but I sincerely doubt it. Not a peep about it. So lawyers don't know anything about it. The government operates them because it's become a tool of the prosecutor, unfortunately. And the only way that we can have justice in America is case by individual case. And case by individual case means that the juries are the final arbiters of right and wrong, the jury, the trial jury, and the grand jury. The prosecutors in our federal government don't have authority to drag anybody into a criminal trial, except the grand jury says so. The grand jury can say yes, the grand jury can say no. Now, one of the great mysteries of the grand jury is that people get mad because they're secret, and that's an old... See, there's another thing. Our common law has always made, for hundreds of years, grand jury proceedings are secret. So if we don't demand that of grand juries now in our federal court system, prosecutions in federal court, well, we're not being constitutional. See, our Constitution is all about our common law. That's what it is. Matter of fact, I should mention this. In England today and all through her history, they have talked about their constitution. Their constitution. When the United States Congress first met at Annapolis, Maryland, it wrote a letter. It wrote a letter to the... I'm going to end with this. It wrote a letter to Parliament and said, we demand the rights of our Constitution and the right to trial by jury, which is part of our Constitution. Of course, the Constitution wasn't going to be written till 1776. They said they wanted the rights of their Constitution. What were they talking about? They were talking about the common law of England. The common law of England is their Constitution, and the common law is still our Constitution. We have a written constitution that has briefed the common law respecting government and everything about our common law that pertains to that document and the phrases in it is part of our constitution. It is that's why we call it the law of the land. That's another phrase for our common law, the law of the land. And not the law of the heavens. It's not the supreme law of the sky. It's not over God. But down here on earth, it's been delegated to us. It's the law of the land. This is Brent Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And go to that website. You can sign up for our grand jury course coming up here on the... when's it coming up? Oh, the 3rd of next month, the 3rd of February. Thursday morning. Go there and see how to sign up, commonlawyer.com, and we're throwing it back in the lap of Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. Appreciate that.
Welcome.
Okay, before we move on from Danny from Wisconsin, who's been waiting patiently, I just want to get this out because this is something that came across my phone and my computer. There was breaking news from the Nassau County.
I can't hear you, Gerard.
What's that?
I can't hear you.
Really? Let me see here if I can make it louder. I don't know why it's not working. Hang on a minute. Let's disable this. Is this better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Okay. Well, all right, so we'll continue that way. So this came across today, and I have to comment on it because, you know, I'm on lots of lists. And anyway, somebody throws this into my messenger, and it says, Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, breaking news, New York State Supreme Court Justice Thomas Ray Rademacher has ruled that the government's mask mandate for students is illegal. The governor and state education department have no, in big capital letters, authority to enforce this mandate without the approval of state lawmakers. This is a major win for constitutional rights of parents. So everybody goes on and goes, is this true? Have you seen this? Is this true? And my remark was, is that why, if you know the law and you know common law, that judge should not have even had to rule on that. We should already know that just by knowing the law, you know? So they want to know if anybody else has seen it. Is it misinformation? And I told them, I said, look, a mandate was never lawful, really. It's voluntary. And even, you know what, I believe that even if the legislature said that they were going to mandate masks, I think they can only do that in a very defined and limited fashion in an emergency situation. With 30 days, 60 days, they'd have to have some real clear and present danger that they believe, and they have evidence that would stop it. And that's what they've done. You know, all these emergency mandates all came with time limits because they're all unconstitutional. And so under the guise of necessity, we give up some of our rights. That's an accepted premise. But what happens is they didn't limit themselves to it. 30 days was 60 days, 60 days was 90, 90 was 120, and they just keep going on and on. So it really is not limited because they're not running it the way they should be. And actually, it should be a personal choice if you want to follow that, if you think that it's going to help you. But, you know, I also ran across this week in I believe it's Germany and there's some other states, that you're not allowed to wear a mask when you're testifying in court. Whether you're testifying or being cross-examined or anything, your face has to be visible. Because if your face is not visible, the jury, the prosecutor, the judge, very hard to tell if you're lying or what your emotions are. And, you know, the jury's supposed to vote their heart. And when somebody's sitting there with a mask on, now this has been part of their law for many years. So I don't know when they came up with that you're not allowed to wear a mask in court. Well, you're not allowed to wear a mask in a lot of places. You're not allowed to cover your face because, I mean, who was the first ones in America that covered their face? The highwaymen, right? They come rob the train, and they put a mask on so nobody can see who they were, right? So that's probably why they outlawed it in court, for the same reason. You want to see the people, and you want to know, you want to see their expressions, and you want to be able to hear their words. So it's wrong on so many levels, and I just want to put that out there. You don't need a judge to tell you that it is unconstitutional. You should know these things just in your heart, if nothing else, that they should not have that kind of control over the people that they've been trying to take. So actually, now's a really good time to resist because the populace is waking up. And when you come out and say the things that I'm saying now, you can actually say them without people accusing you of having three heads. I mean, there's people out there that will, the Karens out there, that will say, oh, no, you have to do this. And actually, it goes against the studies. The studies have proven that masks don't help. Actually, masks make things worse. But I just wanted to give you an example of where people are. And it kind of goes right into what Brent is talking about. People are ignorant. They don't understand the law. I told them, you need to study common law. You need to study the Constitution and common law. I said I'm the National Liberty Alliance because where else are you going to go? Well, and commonlawyer.com, he's teaching it. But there's not too many places that you can learn that today. They're not teaching it in the schools. So that's just a little heads up there. And things are starting to break loose, but you know what? They're only going to go as far as we push them to go. Because the minute that they can lock us down and put their thumb over us, they'll do it again because they never want to give back what they took. So if we can come out of all these mandates and we can banish them forever, that's going to be a victory because, you know, liberty lost is usually not regained. So this is a challenge for us to get rid of all this COVID crap that has removed our First Amendment, our Second Amendment, all our rights have been taken away under the guise of this emergency. And our forefathers talked about how many an egregious thing would be done under the guise of necessity. They would take our rights away. And that's where we are today. And so we need to resist, especially on a local level, where we actually have the power to resist. So that's what, you know, that's what the Committee of Safety is all about. That's what we're supposed to be doing now. We're supposed to be wooing our sheriffs and educating them or getting rid of them, whatever it takes, because there's never been a time that's more important than now to put these things back in place, if we can do it. I hope we can do it. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and unmute Danny because I'm sure he has an intelligent question here. Go ahead, Danny, from Wisconsin.
Thanks, Gerard.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't have a question. John had asked if anybody else had difficulty with courses.
Mm-hmm.
I had already done the Constitution course, but before the website got hijacked or whatever happened to it.
Right.
But I've tried, I couldn't tell you how many times, to do the civics course, and I have the same issue. We cannot advance it at all.
Mm-hmm.
In the introduction, I can listen to the first chapter, but no questions come up or anything to be able to advance through it.
Very frustrating. Well, hopefully we get them fixed. Now,
I trust you will.
Yeah. Well, I won't because I can't do that.
Yeah,
that's above my pay grade.
I'm just going to switch to the foundation study for a while.
There you go. Anyway, hopefully it won't be long. So that's what this keep us posted. That way we know it's working and it's not working. Because
yes, I'll do that too. I'll send something to mail.
Right.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah, because if you don't tell us, it takes us a long. We may never find out because we're not always going into those courses. Anyway, is that it, Danny?
Yeah, just a quick comment on what you said. Because I'm in Wisconsin, and we had the same thing. A year ago, August, our governor came out and issued a mask mandate with a time frame, and then he tried to advance it. Luckily, we have both of our houses in our state are Republican-controlled, and they resisted it, and they took it to the state Supreme Court, and they ruled the same thing. It was an overreach of power. He didn't have the power to do that.
Right, right.
And I own my own business, so we never once went along with it, even when it was there.
Right.
We told people, you want to wear a mask, that's up to you. You don't have to wear a mask here in this business.
Well, if there's one thing that this pandemic has done, it has educated the people. It really has, because people that didn't give a crap or, you know, didn't know any different became very passionate about this, and they looked into it. The governor over here, this Hochul, who was unelected governor, she took over for Cuomo, and she tried to make a mandate, but she knew that it was unconstitutional because the lawyers have been probably based on Wisconsin's ruling and this and that. The lawyers aren't stupid. They keep track of this stuff. So they knew that if it went to court, it would probably get shot down. So she never even wrote it. She just said, I'm issuing a mask mandate, but I'm going to leave it up to the businesses to enforce it, which is another fallacy that a business can enforce a mask mandate. Now, maybe if you had a private business like BJ's Wholesale Club or something like that where you need a special card to get in, you could tell everybody they got to have a brown dot on the end of their nose, and you could probably do that as a private club because you're agreeing to it by your membership. But when it comes to places like Walmart and these big stores like that, they're open to the public, and you can't violate the people's unalienable rights and come up with arbitrary and capricious rules and tell them that they have to do it. You absolutely cannot. And Walmart, besides the fact that it's open to the public, and I get a kick out of when they arrested people, and they actually did arrest somebody for refusing to wear a mask, they get them for trespassing. They don't get them for not wearing a mask, because they know that not wearing a mask is not going to hold up in court. The DAs, the attorneys, they all know that it's a bullcrap rule. So they misapply the statute for trespassing. Well, how do you trespass? Well, because the manager told you to leave and you didn't leave fast enough. I don't know how they can stretch that. But clearly you weren't trespassing. It's a public place. The doors are open for business, you know. So they just and so the governor, with the slimy, no backbone thing she is, she figured she'd leave it up to businesses. What businesses don't understand is, if they enforce these illegal mandates unconstitutional, they are 100% liable. They have no immunities like the drug companies have written in, which I don't even agree that those immunities are even valid, but that's a whole nother discussion. So you can sue them, and you can sue them under your rights. Now, today we have civil rights. Well, that's all. It's also a violation of so-called, quote-unquote, civil rights. But it's a violation of your constitutional, your God, you know, unalienable right for them to try to do that, or to fire you for not wearing one or for not taking a shot and all that stuff. And my prediction is, as people educate themselves over the next few months, you're going to see massive, massive lawsuits. And these companies that just stepped in line, and then when they get sued, they're going to say, well, we were just following the governor's orders. It's going to be like Nuremberg. They're going to say, you're not supposed to obey an unconstitutional order. And they're going to pay. That's my prediction.
But anyway, I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I think people need to pursue that.
Yes, we have forms up all over our front counter for that reason, for people to take to their employers and show them that, hey, you're liable. You could be sued here if you do this.
I always tell them, remember those soldiers? They put them up on the firing squad because they said they shot unarmed prisoners. And what did they say? They said, we were just following orders. And they said, I'm sorry, that was an order that you shouldn't have followed. That was crimes against humanity. You don't shoot unarmed people that are prisoners of war. So, anyway, one of these days we're going to get it, and I'm hoping that we emerge from all this a better, stronger country. I'm hoping that we don't get weaker. I hope we get stronger. Okay. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks. I yield.
I'm going to go to Michael from Michigan because our time is ticking down.
Hey, Jared, Mike.
Hey.
Michigan. This is going to go right back to what you brought up right away in the word mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just referring to the law here, of course, with God's law, is that God gave man dominion. And in this, what I'm reading here, the mandate is to subdue and rule all creatures, including himself. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Right.
That you'll find that in Genesis 1:26-28 about the dominion. So, and I just want to say one other quick thing. I mean, when John was speaking earlier, of course, John has quite a bit of encounters with the court system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And John says his statement was that it's hard to win in court, but in saying that, bad behavior is bad behavior, and the Constitution is not a living document. So that bad behavior still can be punishable by the Constitution, correct?
Absolutely, and I'm hoping that that's going to come to light here. They're not going to be able to run once the light is shown on all this stuff. People are going to get it, and it's going to end up being a very lucrative business punishing those real wrongdoers.
But I understand going to the court, and then they want to flush your mind with their legalese to confuse you while you're there. Is the very reason that that you don't answer to your court, but you bring your own court.
Right. And they have to learn how to accept that too. That's a whole concept that is foreign to all of them, most of them. They don't understand
learn to accept it.
Yeah. And we got some real good common law stuff going on in Canada of all places too, so maybe we can meet in the middle. come up from the lower parallel up to the 45th, and they can come down the 45th, and we can have common law across the North American continents. We can hope. Anyway.
There's one comment that John made earlier. He said states are no longer sovereign. I didn't think he said that they didn't recognize they weren't sovereign. He says, or unless his meaning was that states are no longer sovereign according to the legal system.
Well, I think it was a relationship to them taking the senators away from the legislators and having them be voted on instead of being able to be controlled. So we lost our suffrage, and so basically we've lost our sovereignty in Congress.
But does that supersede the organic constitution that was...
Well, it never could have. First of all, it was a violation of the Constitution in the first place, what they did. That amendment was unconstitutional. So what does I think it's Marbury versus Madison say? It says that the law confers no power, no nothing. You don't have to listen to it. You can disobey it with impunity, but you have to know that, and you have to practice that. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything.
So it's null and void.
It's null and void from the statute or code. Exactly. Yeah. So
the statute and code.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted to talk about.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Yes.
Okay, we got Willie is up next. McKinley, Willie, are you there? I don't hear anything. Did we put you to sleep? Going once? Ooh, let me undo it. I think I muted you by accident. There, you're unmuted. Can you hear me? No, I guess not. No. I don't hear anything. All right, let me try John from Michigan. I guess, can everybody else hear me, right?
Yes, you're on, Gerard.
Okay, so it's not me. I've had so much trouble with this stupid computer tonight, I'm never sure. All right, I'm going to go on to, it's getting late anyway, so Willie, you can jump back in the queue if you want. If we get to you, we'll get to you. So let's see. Oh, are you there? I got Michael from Michigan. And I got John from Michigan. I got lots of Michigans here. Go ahead, Michael. You're unmuted. Can you hear me?
Okay. Well, hopefully John can come through. But there's one word that keeps coming up, and I said, and I'm thinking to myself as people that understand as much or as little as we do about the truth and who we are in this system, we keep using the word pandemic. That creates a sourness in my stomach. I don't think we should call this a pandemic because there's plenty of professional people out there that refute what the so-called experts on the other side
are saying. Well, it's a scandemic. I mean, if you want to get technical, it's a scamdemic, basically.
Yes, yes.
There never was anything. If it wasn't for that PCR test, there would have been nothing. because it's influenza A or B, and that's a fact. They never isolated anything. There was no novel coronavirus. That's a lie from hell. That's Fauci and Gates. And basically what we have now is we have a spike protein bioweapon. And I'm not, you know, they say, oh, from China. It was from America. It was from Fauci, too. It was, yeah, it was Chinese money, but that Chinese money was filtered back to China through our American senators and congressmen that they get to give them money for all kinds of stuff. So it was a conspiracy. You know, it was treason on their part, and China was just a party to it, that's all. You know, they were a convenient scapegoat. We could do stuff over there because they don't get watched. We outlawed that gain of function, so they moved. Fauci moved it to China. I mean, that guy needs to be, I don't know what. I mean, I don't even want to get going because I mean, I nah,
that was in 2015, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, even before that. Yeah.
Before that. Okay.
Well,
okay.
No, I think 2015 they said no gain of function. So then what he did is he went looking to China and he transferred the stuff over there, and they opened up that level 3 lab so that they could continue, you know, weaponizing this thing to turn it back, full well knowing they were going to turn it back on us. They've been doing this for a long, long time. You know, this is if you listen to Dr. Judy Mikovits, she gives you the whole history. And it goes way, way back into the 30s, the 20s and the 30s. They were already planning with their vaccinations and things, and experimenting on the public by releasing stuff. And this didn't just all of a sudden appear. They've been planning it forever, and it's a eugenics plan. And when the truth comes out, people are going to be incensed, and especially all the Karens out there and the people that really embraced it and fought people over it and all that, they're really going to be like deer in the headlights. I wouldn't want to be them, tell you the truth. So, I mean, some of them were so bad, they'll probably want to jump off a building because it was shameful the way they conducted themselves, you know, and bowed to the masters and licked the boots of the hands that fed them, you know? What our forefathers say, let your chains brush lightly upon you and let prosperity forget you that you are our countrymen. And that's exactly who those people are. They're the worst of the worst. But anyway, it's due to their ignorance, though. I can't judge them.
Yeah. Gerard, that Danny was on earlier. Did he say he is from Michigan?
Well, that's what my board said.
Good.
I don't know. I kind of lost it. Yeah.
Danny.
I like,
are you asking about Danny?
Yeah, Danny from Michigan.
He's Wisconsin, not Michigan.
Oh, see, Wisconsin.
Okay.
That's my
bad. All right. So.
Okay.
All right.
I do have, I don't know, this is John from Michigan. I'm going to go ahead to Michael.
Yes.
All right. So let's see here. We have John, you're unmuted. Do you hear me?
Okay, yeah, now I can hear you. Yeah, and this is John from Michigan. Mike, I was wondering where Mike was in Michigan, so
yeah.
I'm in Kalamazoo. So,
okay.
At any rate, my question, I guess, is from all you guys, how much, I don't believe hardly anything that you hear on the radio or in TV or whatever like that, and they're claiming, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80% of the people getting vaccinated. How much should we believe? I'm sure heck's not getting vaccinated. I'm just curious of.
Well, it's hard to say. It's very hard. It's a good question, and it's hard to say because they have put out placebos. They're experimenting, and they're throwing different batches out at different times because the shot is the experiment. Some people got nothing but salt water. That's what you don't know. Because and they have discovered in the batch numbers ratings, and some of them are rated for absolutely first kill right off the bat, that is going to kill you, and it has a certain rating, and those things have just been published, the ratings of the batch numbers, and you can actually look them up. I'm telling you, this whole thing's blowing up in their face. It's horrible.
I understand that. I'm just, I guess my question was, I have no idea how many people thought, and if they got a placebo, how many people thought they were taking a vaccine? I mean, what is the percentage of that?
The last good number, and it's probably went up since then because they were really pushing people hard, you know, healthcare workers and stuff, and I just know, like, people I'm close to around here, it was like 45% unvaccinated. I think it's less than that now. I think that they wore people down and people said the heck with it. And you know, the other thing that wears that number down is if they are giving placebos out, and then you know a guy that got vaccination and he got absolutely no effects, you go, oh, it can't be that bad. Joey got it. He didn't feel a thing. Well, that's just to suck more people in when they're ready, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I believe, what do they say, about 90% of what you, don't believe 90% of what you hear and nothing what you see or whatever like that. But I'd really be curious what the rate of slavery is, if you will, in this country. I mean,
it's pretty disgusting, to be honest with you. It really is. And as you get to the two ends of the nation, it's worse. California and New York, you know, just sheeple doing what they, you know, even against their better judgment, they go get it because they think that they're going to be free, which is never going to happen. You know, you're dealing with the devil, and he's never going to give you what he promises you. It's all lies. And a lot of people just took it just to, oh, I gotta see my daughter. She's in college and all this stuff. Well, you know what? Guess what? All you and your daughter and everybody that took that in 3 years, you know, if you got the real shot, you'll be dead. And that's what Michael Yeardon, of the former CEO of Pfizer, said in no uncertain terms.
I live in Kalamazoo, and that's where Pfizer's making a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, well, guess what? They took on a death sentence. I mean, and we know for a fact, because Israel locked down so hard that they had like an 80-something percent compliance rate. And what were the hospitals filled with? 80% of vaccinated people. So this is a pandemic of the vaccinated, not the other way around, where they're claiming that the unvaccinated people are spreading it. That's a lie from hell. It's never been seen before. If you don't have symptoms, you don't have it, and you're not contagious. We've never seen a disease that you could pass on without having symptoms. You know.
Here's a question: Do you think that a vaccinated person can infect someone that's not vaccinated? What's your take on that?
And that's what killed my sister. My sister was in the healthcare industry. She was a X-ray technician, mammography and stuff, and she refused to get vaccinated. She ended up leaving the hospital because they were mandated to get vaccinated, and she worked for a private company where she didn't have to be vaccinated. But everybody she worked around and all the patients that came in were vaccinated. And what did she get? She got spike protein in her lungs. She was not vaccinated, but she had the blood clots. When you catch that spike protein, it's worse than anything. It's a killer. You're better off.
You stay away from people who are vaccinated then?
I would. As a matter of fact, Pfizer had a warning that said that you're supposed to not come in close contact with people for 15 days. The one said 30, but most of them said 15. And all of a sudden, you don't hear anything about that. You know, husbands giving it to their wives and vice versa. And it's worse for women, by the way, because it goes right into their ovaries. It sterilizes them. It has special targeting, especially for women. So women are more susceptible to the shedded spike protein. Yeah. But anybody can be susceptible, you know. But that's why it's very important to keep your immune system up. And to take all the, you know, make sure you're getting the supplements, because you're not going to get them from your diet, that you're getting D3 and that you're getting magnesium and zinc and all this stuff. Because otherwise, you're going to catch it and it's going to be worse than anything. You're going to, you know, if you don't die, you'll be sick the rest of your life.
Okay.
So, and that's what we're going to face. We're going to face, you know, a third of the world's population dying off from this, and the ones that don't die are going to be sick, and the rest of us are going to have to take care of them. So it doesn't look real good if they, you know, hopefully there's a lot more placebo out there than we realize. That's all I can tell you. I don't know.
I would love to know the real truth, because you don't have any idea what to believe from anybody. You know, I mean, good, bad, or indifferent, or how much of it is true and how much of it is lies. It's you know, give me the truth. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. But I sure don't know who to believe. And there's a lot of
skeletons on both sides. Here's something that you can sink your teeth into a little bit, because this is what happens: is there are certain truths that prevail. The truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. Now, one thing we know is that the VAER system is only between 1 and 10% reported. So whatever they're saying, who had adverse reaction, and we know that children are really bad with myocarditis and all this stuff, and a lot of them are dropping dead right there. That's obvious. You know, that's an obvious one that's hard for them to hide. Mm-hmm. So the numbers that the CDC has given us and the vaccine companies is pretty much, you know, 90% under reported, you know, as far as adverse reactions. I mean, and that's even taking into account the fact that they have some placebos. I'm talking about people that took the shot and had all kinds of crazy other problems afterwards, whether it was Guillain-Barré or this, that, the other thing. It attacks you on so many levels. And what's going to happen, too, what's going to make it very hard is some of this stuff is going to take 2 or 3 years, 4 years to raise its head, and they're not going to point at the vaccine as the cause. You're going to see certain cancers coming up, heart conditions, unusual, strange diseases that are very rare. All of a sudden they're going to become common because it's going to be driven by this vaccine. And I do know from guys that are in a much higher pay grade than I am that are experts in this, and they claim that every booster that you get, you lose a third of your immune system, so that by the time you get the third booster, you're an AIDS patient, basically. Right. Their plan is that you got to take the boosters to live after that.
Right. Well, I've seen videos like of professional soccer players and professional, you know, the referees, stuff like that, on the court, just walking over and just falling just backwards, just dead, just on the floor court. And that's I read that it's like there's hundreds of cases of that all over the world. You know, soccer players, I mean, that are just super, super, super fit, dying of heart attacks right out in the field. I mean, and you're seeing that basketball players, how can they cover that up that much? You know, and if everybody saw that, there would be hell of an outrage. And
they don't necessarily say it's because of the vaccine, but what else could it be? I mean, think about it. We didn't see this crap, you know, 2 years ago or a year ago even. And you're seeing it now, and it's obvious. You know, the families know that that's what it is. And I think that the younger people and younger males especially, you know, are more prone to the heart conditions because their immune system is very up. And that a lot of times is a problem, because what ends up killing you is the cytostorm, is your own immune system attacking your body. So if you're older and you got other conditions in your body, you won't necessarily react to that shot the way somebody who has a very robust immune system will. And that's what steroids do. They shut the immune system down so you don't get this horrible reaction that ends up taking you out with this pneumonia that chokes you to death. So by virtue of a strong immune system, they're actually at higher risk than somebody who's older or has more concomitant conditions. It doesn't attack them as quick. Their immune system doesn't react, and that actually saves their life. So,
hey, I'm taking up too much time, but I'm just telling all the people in Michigan. There's something like there's two or three of us on here tonight. I'm in Southwest Michigan, but I'm John from Kalamazoo, and if you got a list of people in association, I mean, we should get in touch with each other, so we got to do that.
Yeah, I'll take that down. Everybody can hear. Taking your notes. That's what this is about, too. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Okay, thank you, John.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to do... It's getting late. We got Michael from Michigan. Go ahead, another Michigan.
No, there's three times Mike tonight. Yeah, John was just on. I'd like to inform John of what he just requested, that I live in the Zeeland, Michigan. I know John from meeting with Sheriff Dyer at the sheriff's meetings here in Michigan. So, yeah, if you want to contact me, John, 616-283-3290. I just wanted to say that.
Okay, thank you. Going to jump real quick here to Amy. Go ahead, Amy. What do you got?
Right.
We can do it quick. We got a few minutes, barely.
Oh, right. So the caller before brought up that library versus medicine. I'm wondering if you could explain that. Is that where if something's like repugnant to the Constitution, it's null and void?
Yeah, that's what it says. That's what Marbury versus Madison says, that if it's repugnant to the Constitution, it's null and void. It was null from the day that it was its inception, and you don't have to pay attention to it, and you can disobey it with impunity. Of course, that doesn't help you while they're enforcing it. It might come in handy in the end after they beat you up and throw you in jail and all that other stuff. But I guess it should make you feel good.
Does that include the argument for... requesting that they dismiss a lawsuit because it was filed under the all caps name instead of your natural name, your living name?
Well, you know, look, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can split hairs like that, but are you a human being? You know what I mean? It doesn't matter, you know, as far as the all caps and this and that. You cannot violate human rights like that. So that, as far as I'm concerned, that's really not an issue here. The fact is, you know, if you're a man and you're living and you're breathing, you have unalienable rights that come from God that no man can take from you. Just remember that. I don't care if you got an all caps name or whatever you're calling yourself. It doesn't matter. And those things only have power if we give it to them. You know, and as far as, you know...
So what would you cite as a reason to dismiss something for them using filing the case on the docket under the wrong legal entity?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. I didn't understand. I'm having trouble.
If you would want to ask the judge to dismiss the case because it's filed under the incorrect legal entity, What
would
you point to as the legal
precedent? Well, first of all, he's never going to do that, because that would ruin too many cases. If he allowed you to make that point and actually uphold it, the only way anything like that is going to happen is if we the people stop using that and we en masse resist it. For you to go into a court and think that judge is going to hear you and do that for you, because what would happen is his life wouldn't be worth, you know, a bowl of pretzels at the end of the day if he did that. Because why?
I was going to file that in my, I have to respond to this Southern complaint by February 3rd, and that's the first thing I noticed, is to the wrong legal entity. It doesn't match the contract that they're disputing.
Look, you could raise it briefly so that it's in your paperwork, but I wouldn't rest on it, because they're going to say you're a kook. You know what I mean? I would mention it that this is not really me, because I'm not that corporate entity that you're making me out to be. You know, and I mean, look at even in. In the IRS cases that John fought, he made those things. I mean, if you read through their stupid statutes, they got all kinds of stuff that says that you're a purveyor of gasoline and fuel oil and all this stuff that have nothing to do with you or me, but that's what they do. And so I think it's important to say that's not me. I wouldn't get specific about it. I would say, oh, you're mistaken. That's not me. I'm so-and-so, and then let it go at that. And if you raised it as an issue, and on the other side of this, you can always come back and say, well, look, they ignored it. I already protested, and they didn't give me, you know, my proper status or whatever you want to call it. But nevertheless, it's fraud to begin with. And when you got that name and number, they didn't ask you. There was no informed consent. It's all fraud. So.
So I mean, this is the first time I kind of feel like responding that because it's to the wrong legal entity, that points 1 through 34, I shouldn't have to address because it's to the wrong legal entity. That
I understand that, but if you don't respond, they will arrest you.
Oh, that's how I want to respond, because that's my argument, that it's a mismatch of legal entities between the lawsuit and the contract of disputing.
Right. I don't know how good you'll do with that, but you can look at. I'm not saying you can't bring it up, but they, you know, the trouble is they've been trained. They go to schools and they train people. The minute you start complaining about the all caps name and stuff, they go, "Oh, this is another one of those frivolous sovereign citizen arguments." So unless you're really good at articulating, in the paper, and you can convince the judge, which the judge is not going to be convinced if it comes down between you and some big corporation, or you and the IRS or stuff like that. They're just not going to go against that. Until we change the judges, that's an argument that is not going to be acknowledged. You know, they're going to, matter of fact, they've sent people to get evaluated in mental institutions for bringing that very thing up. They say, you're crazy. Okay, so right. That's where you're at. Just know that if you're going to bring it up, they're going to say you're crazy. So I would be careful how I say it. I'm not saying that I wouldn't say it, but I would say it in not so many words, just so that it's in there, and then maybe you can bring it back up a different way later on. And you know, I'm sure that there's probably some good rulings that you can find out that will bolster that. But it's a very, until this system gets purged, It's not going to be a good argument to win on. The only way that you win, like with the IRS and that, is if you can get them in a horn dilemma between their own statutes. And I've seen people do that. And what happens is they win that time, but you'll never win on it again because they go in and fix it afterwards. They learn from their mistakes. So you can get them caught between their statutes, where the two statutes don't agree and they kind of negate each other. And they call and they're in a horn dilemma, because if they go this way, then that means this must be. I mean, they can't move. They're in a horn dilemma. I mean, whatever way they go, they're wrong. And so they, at that point, they let you go because it's not worth it. But they usually fix the statute at that point so that you can't bring that up or do it again.
Oh, the other issue that when I talked to litigation attorney, he said he would argue versus common law, I think he's looking back is to say, like, a co-op is really not a unique property. It's a share of stock, which is not unique.
It's going to take a while for people to get their head around that stuff, but, you know, in the future, any of those cases will have to be recalled back, or you'll have to go in and fight it after it's understood that these things are not for we the people. That's all I can tell you. You know, I mean, we've beat our head against the wall with this type of stuff for a long time, and there's not too many people that I know of that are winning with it. So until we have a change in understanding, And ignorance is banished, you're not going to have much luck with that stuff.
On a separate topic, so I enforce my rights with my employer, Infosys, and a client, Citibank, bank, which you may have saw in the news. They were reporting the vaccine mandate. So they actually fire everybody just before the Supreme the SCOTUS ruling on the the mandates, which I thought was asinine, because it's like you said earlier tonight, you need the Supreme Court to tell you a mandate is unlawful. You could just look it up in
well,
the dictionary.
Look at all those employers are liable for that. They are not protected, and you can sue them. And I would not leave. I would make them fire me. I would make them escort me to the door. I would make them arrest me to get me out of there. That
so,
way there's
so
evidence.
They said you need to update the portal with your vaccination status. I said, I am the only one that can give permission to share my private medical information, and I do not give it. I'm not updating
right.
the damn portal.
Well, that's a good argument. That's an argument that maybe a judge would see. You know what I mean? It's not like the all caps argument. I mean, you have HIPAA on your side, and you have some other things on your side.
And if you make
a good argument, maybe you'll prevail. But of course, again, it's going against these major corporations that fund the judges getting in there. This is why we don't get any justice, because they've got them all bought and paid for.
So I had to go on a conference call with like two HR reps and a human employee relations rep, and they were all these young girls. They were reciting something that was incorrect, and then I gave them a laundry list of laws that they're breaking. The Universal Declaration of Bioethics and Human Rights, Article 6, the Geneva Convention, 1949, Article 32, the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 21, Part 50, the Nuremberg Code.
Well, when you quote all that stuff, you should be giving them a notice of liability, which is your intent to go after them for doing that. And a lot of times, that really shakes them up. You know what I mean? Because what you're saying is you're holding them personally responsible. In other words, you're not holding the state responsible. You're holding this actor responsible for violating your unalienable rights, and you're holding them personally responsible. And a lot of times that makes a difference. You know, people have won using notices of liability.
They're also violating the terms and conditions of the EUA, which says no coercion.
Right.
It's part of the terms and conditions of the EUA for the vaccines. The PCR tests are also under EUA. There could be no coercion, which they, if you have to have the PCR test to buy, that's coercion.
They can't. Listen, it's so ridiculous that they think that they can mandate an emergency use anything with no material data sheet, no ingredients. It makes no sense whatever at all.
Yeah.
And if it ever gets to court, they're going to lose, because anybody that's got a lick of sense is going to know that that's baloney. But look, I want to go. I'm trying to keep this to 2 hours, and we're 17 minutes over, so I'm gonna cut it off, because I don't want to be the one that runs us into the 3 hours where we didn't want to be. So I want to thank everybody. A lot of good questions, and if you didn't get in, come back next week with it. They'll keep. I'm sure whatever your question is, it won't be over by next week. So I'll see if I can help you answer it. Thank you, everybody, and see you next week, same time, same station.